It's a good 10 minutes, NBA playoff edition. We'll be doing a lot of these throughout the playoffs, so make sure you subscribe. We're not doing just one a week. If we have games the night before and I'm not taping the podcast, we'll be doing these. So let me run through two of the games, a little bit more depth. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on Toronto and Cleveland, even though I do have some thoughts. Anyway, the headliner is Minnesota getting even in Denver, winning game two. It did not look like this was going to happen. A bunch of bad stuff going on for Minnesota. 3 minutes into the game, Ants bringing the ball up left side of the court. Kind of stumbles a bit, staggers, grabs his knee, grimaces. You're like, all right. And then he didn't look right for a long stretch. I think he's okay. Or whatever he's dealing with, he's going to be able to fight through it. At least he did last night. Denver in the first quarter shoots 67% from the floor, 67% from three, 9 of 10 on free throw attempts. It's 39-25 after the first quarter. It got even worse. It was 44-25. All right. There's no attack from Minnesota, which then became the theme of their comeback. The only attack that we saw was Bones Highland keeping the basketball on a 3-on-1 and decided to just try to go through a Denver defender. It was a clear charge. Of course, Bones immediately is like, why don't we take another look at that? We're like, you know what? How about we don't? Inexplicably, Minnesota fouled on 3 3-point attempts in that first quarter. There was 3 4-point plays. That doesn't happen. So it was ugly. And you're like, what is Minnesota going to do? You know, a team that I would say the last couple of years I felt better about going into the playoffs, certainly than this year. I don't even think that's a debate, even though everybody picked the Lakers in the first round last year in that Minnesota series. But, you know, I think Minnesota fans, rightfully so, are like, hey, we're a team that, you know, keeps kind of fighting through the playoffs here and everybody's kind of writing us off. It looked like Denver was trying to avoid them in the first round. And then you see them down 19 immediately at Denver, and you're just like, all right, well, maybe this is why we were all kind of down on you guys. And then Jonas Valanciunas comes into the game. And I think that Minnesota's bench should just get up when he's at the scorer's table and just start cheering. Because this seemed to wake something up with Minnesota's offense. It's like, all right, you know, if everybody's loading up on Ant, Randall was much better. DiVincenzo got it going early. I thought Jaden McDaniels was so much more aggressive throughout the entire night. You're not going to pencil in Rudy for 17 every single game, right? Like you had in game one. But it was almost like, hey, this is so bad. Let's just put our heads down and go. And it worked. And it worked for the rest of the game. Like something that I think may have at least shifted. I'm not saying that Minnesota's now going to win, and we all get a little too carried away with the results from game one, and then, oh, now it's even, and wow, is Denver on the ropes, all this kind of stuff. Like, welcome to a series against especially a team like Minnesota, who I don't think there's many teams that could have been down 19 in the playoffs at Denver like that and then come back and fight back and win this game. I don't think that's a long list of teams, but just a reminder that, you know, when these games, or at least these series, go 6 or 7 games, you're going to have these moments and these swings where it seems like, well, how are they going to answer this thing that we just saw last night? But if there's one thing that I would hope for is that Finch and this team are going, hey, we can attack these guys. And when Valanciunas is in, attack. And guess what? When Jokic is in, attack. And that's what we saw. So they get it to 44-34. Rudy actually checks out with 9:06 to go in the second quarter. And Ant ends up taking the lead at 49-48 to put together a 24-4 run. Now, a little bit of a tease on one of the thoughts that I had from the Atlanta-New York game, too, is Dyson Daniels is out of the game. And then I started thinking during this comeback, even though Rudy was there for like the first 10 points of it, the next 10 points of it, I was like, okay, so he's taking Rudy out here. Is this one of those crazy shifts from game one to game two that Rudy is now not going to be involved? And guess what? Involved he was. So let's not beat up on Rudy today, because today would not be the day. The fourth quarter, Murray makes a shot with 9:54 to go in the game. He missed his next 5 shot attempts to close the game. Jokic missed his first 6 attempts in the fourth quarter. Some of it, I think, is some of the stuff I was talking about in game one, where Rudy just is challenging him. You know, Jokic has some all-time numbers going up against Rudy. And I think Rudy, so far in these first 2 games, has taken that personally. Our guy John Krasinski on The Athletic wrote a love letter to Rudy today. And a lot of it was based on, like, how much people talk shit about Rudy. And look, hand up, I don't always love it. especially if I were throwing to his hand up. But this is affecting Jokic. And, you know, there's some two-man game stuff that we always know you're going to see with Denver. And I think there's some, hey, do they want to switch this up and try to get Jokic onto Jaden McDaniels? Because, I mean, in the third quarter when Rudy's out of the game, Jokic has this stretch where it's a bucket against Nas, another bucket against Nas. They get a switch against McDaniels, bucket, then Nas again. So he's doing all of that work in that big third quarter for Jokic when Rudy was out of the game. And then in the fourth quarter, he misses all these shots. I think some of them were great defensive plays by Rudy or just great positioning. I think some of them are just straight up misses. You know, not that you would expect Jokic to have that bad of a fourth quarter multiple times throughout a playoff series. But Rudy is just incredibly active on him. And then you flip it to the other side. There's a play, 105-100, Ants on the left side in front of Minnesota's bench. He goes right past Murray, and then he goes right past Jokic. And it's a bucket. And they pull this thing out. And we can get to the Christian Brown missing a free throw and all that kind of stuff. But it was really about Jokic and Murray missing everything in the fourth. This Minnesota defense just having a night where it's a win, right? That's a win for them last night, just not in the score, but a win for them being able to limit those two guys, because that's not going to happen all the time. And I think the thing to build on, as opposed to the randomness of just shooting output, is I think something happened with Minnesota last night where they woke up and they're like, hey, we can go at these guys more. And Jaden McDaniels said, quote, they're all bad defenders. Quote, go after Jokic, go after Jamal, all the bad defenders. Tim Hardaway, Cam Johnson, Aaron Gordon, the whole team, just go at him. The reporter asked, are they all bad defenders? Quote, McDaniels, yes, they're all bad defenders. Minnesota evens the series. All right, Atlanta steals one at MSG. Just as an aside, MSG is the best. It's just the best. I'm not the biggest Alvarado guy out there, but when he was going at it with CJ, which Alvarado 100% started, but then he decides to pick him up full court and the place starts going crazy. I just don't think there's a lot of basketball arenas where the fans are that locked in of something that seems that insignificant, but it's just the crowd's appreciation by giving the players the energy that the players are playing with. It was just one of those little moments in there where like MSG's just the best. And then they're playing Jadakiss. It's like, you know, how could you not? You should not fall in love with hoops at that place. So Atlanta's down 91-79 going into the fourth quarter. New York this season is 46-2 entering the fourth quarter with a lead. They have a net rating in the fourth quarter. They said this on the broadcast last night. That's the best that we've had in the NBA since the 85-86 Milwaukee Bucks. So, of course, they lose this game. What do we talk about? After the April 6th regular season game, bad bench output for this Atlanta team, which is a theme because of how much we all love the production, and the numbers are even more impressive in a way of what that starting five unit is since the CJ trade. CJ was fantastic last night, hunting Brunson as much as he possibly could. And the other side, CJ's getting hunted quite a bit. So two dudes in season. So of course the Knicks lose this with those numbers. The bench numbers, they flipped. Game one, it was a disaster. As I mentioned, the April 6th regular season game, it was a disaster. Common theme here, Atlanta plus 22 bench for the game. New York minus 20. Kuminga was hard on your guy, folks. Was very hard on him after game one. I still am not going to love the process of him deciding which shots he's going to take and not going to take, except he's going to take them all. He had 19. He had two plays defensively, which were outstanding. Mitchell Robinson's coming in. You feel like you could lob it to Mitchell Robinson half the possessions he's in there, and it would still probably be productive for you. He reads it, gets back, his absurd athleticism, gets into the play, and breaks up the lob. Then he has a help block on a Brunson drive where the ball could press charges on Kuminga for how violent this block was. So it wasn't just the 19, but how about this? And this is kind of the bigger picture decision of, are we now going to see something different from Atlanta? No Dyson Daniels really in the fourth quarter. He played 2 minutes. He played only 10 minutes total in the second half. So Daniels, who you think, hey, this is this great dude who we can disrupt, we can use different ways defensively. We know about his deflections. We know how great he is defensively. He's a really smart, competitive player, all those things. But off the ball, whether it's with CJ, whether it's with Jalen, Alexander Walker, it's feeling like the shots that are out there for him are far more challenging than the shots that would be there for him during the regular season. Okongwu's going to provide you enough spacing that you at least have to respect it, even though I think New York's kind of like, whatever, if you hit some threes, we're okay with it. Kuminga played the entire fourth quarter. And so that is something that I'll be looking at here going, was that a game two decision? Or is this something that I will always think about now and how these teams are built is, do you have somebody out there of your five who off the ball is someone you can completely ignore? This is what OKC ran into with the Giddey problem. The year OKC lost to Dallas in the second round, and as talented as Giddey is, it's like, yeah, but we want the ball in SGA's hands. So, you know, Giddey's a really nice player. He's a really good defender. He's a terrific passer. But it becomes even more glaring, I think, as a series plays out, where the other team, I don't even know that it's necessarily desperation. Sometimes it's desperation, but sometimes it's just, hey, why are we sending anyone to Giddey ever? Like, always help. If you're assigned to Giddey, don't even worry about it. Your main assignment is to constantly get into the passing lanes. It's to leave him. It's to help on every single drive. If there's a closeout decision, it's always the other person. It's never him. And then you could see Giddey's minutes going down with OKC because it's like, you know what? This is actually hurting us and it's clogging us up a little bit. I mean, I even had the thought during the comeback from Minnesota with Rudy being out for such a long stretch of the second part of that comeback, but clearly he was pivotal. That's just a different word. Instrumental, I should say, in them closing out Denver in game two. So I'm not necessarily like, it crossed my mind after just seeing it happen with Dyson Daniels. Defensively, they were still able to survive in the fourth quarter without playing one of their best defensive players. They were definitely doubling Brunson more. And if you're going to double Brunson that much, Cat has to eat. Cat missed the only two shots he took in the fourth quarter. No rebounds, no assists. This is not like beating up on Cat, but if Cat's not making any shots, then you're just not getting the rest of this stuff. Those are old big man tenets. That's just what happens. Like, you're going to have to figure out how you want to position him. There was something that happened in Minnesota-Denver last night where they were trying to double Ant and keep two with him, but they had DiVincenzo up, and then McDaniels was in the corner, and DiVincenzo hits a three because he's in that slot. And it was really good by Austin Rivers pointing out they had the same formation, except that they were replaced where DiVincenzo was in the corner, McDaniels was in the slot, and is doubled, and Rivers immediately picks it up. He's like, hey, they got to change. They got to invert that. Like, you got to get DiVincenzo back into that slot there. So I don't know if that's a Cat thing and where he's positioning, if Atlanta's going to continue to try to close in the fourth quarter with some of these double teams on Brunson, because teams just are not going to start the game going, hey, we're going to just double Brunson immediately. And then maybe you get somebody else involved, and then they're able to figure out what they want to do. There are things that teams save for those fourth quarters. So the Knicks in the fourth, 5 of 22. Alvarado had 4 minutes in the fourth quarter. I know he's exciting. I know he's a fan favorite. I know that he's from there and all those things. He holds the ball way too long. He kind of kills you on too many possessions because he's out there trying to figure out, like, and then he gets stuck with the ball and it ends up being a tougher shot. Those are a lot of minutes there and a lot of dribbling for this point of the year is all I'll say on that. All right. Harden goes off early. Mitchell goes off the entire game. Mobley was terrific. Brandon Ingram, who I actually kind of gave a bit of an out on the 9 field goal attempts because I said he went to the free throw line 10 times. You know, sometimes it can mess it up. Like, you'll look at a shot chart the next day of a game and you go, oh my God, this guy only took one shot. It's like, all right, double check the free throws. He's like, well, he took 6. So it's kind of like 4 shots, 4, 8, 16. That's pretty good. Ingram goes 3 of 15. And this is always my worry with him because I've seen it with the Pelicans. When things crank up, the physicality, getting free off the ball, and then he's passing out of some shots. I think he could have taken even more shots last night. And there's some looks that he's just passing out of. So if your number one scoring option is someone I've seen in the past, like, this is why I bring it up all the time with him during the regular season. Like, oh, we'll see what happens in the playoffs here. It's happening. And then you can't go 3-15 after you complain about not getting more shots. Positive note for Toronto, Scotty Barnes. My God, I love this guy. Like, I fell in love with him again all over last night. yes, there are some limitations. And during some of the down years, it was like he's supposed to do everything. He's supposed to play point guard and then score all the points and like do all this stuff on his own. And then, you know, they bring in more talent, Barrett scoring, quickly scoring, Ingram scoring in theory. But Barnes decided at some points, like, we're not going out like this. Like, we're going to fight back. We know we're outmanned. We know these guys are cooking right now. I'm going to fight my ass off the entire night. And I'm going to go quick. I'm going to go with intention. And there was just a lot of really great Scotty Barnes stuff. I don't care about the box score. I mean, look, he had a ton of points. So the box score is good. But it was more of that. And also noticing that Toronto maybe abandoning the Poeltl idea here and just going with more Murray Boyles, who has just been, you know, I think he was productive in game one because Cleveland didn't care. But I think he's had some really smart plays. He had an incredible Gortat screen that I didn't even think he would like. It was almost like a lead blocker deal. It was terrific on a drive. So, look, Toronto's in trouble. We already knew that. So, look, we got two even series after what would look like the first 14 minutes of game two, that Minnesota was going to go out and we were going to go, oh, yeah, man, that team's heading in the wrong direction. And a ton of credit to them. Pride of a team that's gone deep in the playoffs in the past. Very impressive. And I would not expect Jokic to look like that again. And he was terrible. He was terrible, I thought, in the fourth quarter and just attacked. And he better buckle up and get ready because now I think Minnesota's a little more awake on what their approach should be. Let's get some emails in and bring in Saruti, NBA RR. Wait, NBA mailbag RR at gmail.com. Right. That's probably, yeah. Well, we have like 17 different emails here. So again, NBA mailbag RR at gmail. Get those in. Maybe we'll just do a rapid fire episode too on top of everything else. But it seemed like there was a pretty constant email today. So maybe we'll just do one.
Yeah, we had a lot of tanking emails. We hadn't checked in a while. That's our bad. We haven't done this in a bit, but the playoffs are here, so we're going to be doing it way more often, and we're going to do it Thursday, so get a bunch of questions in for Thursday's show, and yeah, we'll get a bunch more in. Before I get to the email that I do want to ask you about, quick Knicks thing. You are 100% right. Been lucky enough to be at the Garden multiple times. That place, it feels different. It's awesome. It is, like, I people say that, and like the Mecca thing, but it is so
It's better cool. than Boston. Oh, it's, dude. It's not even a question.
It's not, yeah. It's cool.
I think Lakers games are up there with Boston. I'm serious. Like, I wouldn't be a Lakers fan and be like, man, I wonder what Boston's going to be like. And like, it's kind of just like yours, like awesome. Like, Boston's mm-hmm. terrific, but MSG's another level.
I say that to say, and I like Knicks fans. You know, I'm not a Knicks fan. I'm close to New York, but it's not one of those things where I like dislike Knicks fans. The F Trae Young chant and the, like, after blowing this terrible kind of lead and now it's 1-1 chanting Knicks in five outside afterwards. Like, I just think we could do better. I think we could do better. I don't like it. And I just want to point it out. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, that's fine. But it's a bit like, it's like arguing about the 82 game schedule thing where I just go, oh yeah, man, great ideas. Maybe it would prevent a bunch of injuries. Cool. It's not like, what are we doing? It's like asking the sun to do something different, you know? So I would put this in the category of like court storming, where there was a time you're like, I can't believe you're court storming. And it's like, now kids just want to have a good time. Like, right. We beat Creighton and they're not ranked, fucking storm the court.
I get my phone out, I'm selfie yeah. video, I yeah. posted all my friends. Here we go.
So whatever cool. the threshold that you had to surpass to like have, so these Knicks videos have been going on for years of just, hey, we're going to film everybody and have them lose their minds, which I'll tell you.
It's great.
I've laughed hysterically at some of these videos. Like, right. Some of those guys are so good because there's a lot of people that aren't good at this. And some
what
of these
do you think
guys
the edits on those are? Like, do you think they use 5%? Like, what's the hit rate on those guys just screaming into a camera?
It's higher in New York than anywhere else. But you're right. I'm sure some terrible ones get it edited out. But like, when there's a dude that's probably never been in the building, he's wearing a Knicks jersey and he's holding another Knicks jersey around his crotch and he's screaming like just the most offensive things about, it'll just be something crazy where it's like, fuck Sam Hauser, yo. And you just go like, what? Where did that come Hauser? From?
Yeah.
Like, who's prepping your con? But it just sort of works and it's kind of funny. So yeah, you could say, hey, hey, Knicks, act like you've been here before and all these different stuff.
It's not, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. It's mostly the Trae Young thing. I'm like, all right. Like,
you don't think the Trae Young thing's kind of funny? I don't think it's funny.
I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's really weird, actually. Like he kind of was your daddy for a little bit, and then now he doesn't play on the team anymore.
I don't think chants are supposed to mean anything anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm being, you know what? Maybe I'm being the court storming snob. I don't know. I do genuinely like that. What, the original like Bing Bong thing and all that, that whole thing happened, I was all in on. But I feel like, you know, maybe I just hold them too high of a standard now. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they say some horrible shit, but I'll laugh.
Correct. Yeah.
Like, I want to say some of the ones they've said, but I can't. I don't want to do it because I'm not going to.
You can go find that wherever you want. Yeah. We're not going to repeat the internet here. But all right, maybe I'm being too much of a downer.
I would just as an aside, I was tracking flops last night in the second quarter from New York. I'm not doing it yet. But there's an ether type 10 minutes in me about when this Knicks team decides to get a little flop happy. And it's gross. And I'll also say this, the Daniels hit into Josh Hart, I've never seen a play replayed that much in any game I've ever watched, ever. And I've been doing this watching games thing for a really long time. I rewound it to just go, how many times did they show Hart getting hit in the face? It was 15 times. They replayed that 15 times. You want to know why he got hit in the face? Because he went low. It was like a receiver ducking after the catch, and then the defensive back is penalized for targeting. That was a wide stance from Hart. He got low. They reviewed it. It took forever during the review. They replayed him getting hit in the face 15 times. I've never seen a replay. I don't think I can ever remember ever there ever being a time where it's like, hey, let's show this. And it wasn't like it was a game-winning shot. Just a guy on the screen.
Replay bias. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows?
Sorry, I'm losing you right now. I'm sorry,
no,
sir.
You're good. Let's bring it back. All right, we got one good, one relevant email here. This is from Mike in Chicago. Billy Donovan is out. He, I guess, had a clause in his contract, right, where he could just opt out, essentially. Not a terrible surprise. He asked, where do the Bulls go from here? And is Billy Donovan a good NBA coach?
My guess will be the next hot assistant thing is the way, especially when the team isn't good. So come in, take the lumps. I don't know why anyone with a high profile will come in and take this job. It is one of the three least exciting rosters in the NBA. With Bezelis and Giddey, it's probably still more exciting than Sacramento.
Yeah, depends on the lottery pans out, but
sure.
You know, like I'd rather, I mean, both of them, but I don't trust either front office. So I like you're asking.
Well, I don't trust ownership here.
That too, yep.
On this one. Because I would tell you over the years, I think Sacramento's done some things I liked, but whose roster would you rather have? Maybe we save that for a different, we just do, we run through it. You and I are good with that. Because we disagree a lot. If we just go, didn't we already do something like that? Like the five least exciting rosters? And
should
we
I
should
ask
update
you,
that.
You rather have OKC's bench or the Bulls roster? Because, yeah, like I like Bezelis and Giddey's okay, but I'm not like losing my mind over those two. Like
if Patrick Williams ever puts it together, though, yeah, listen, that's three guys.
Next year. I do love people now are bringing up the whole like, oh man, they should have taken Denny Avdija over Patrick Williams. Like, yeah, it's easy to say that now, man.
I've never thought that once. That's for you saying it is the first time I've even heard.
I've seen that everywhere. It's like, all right.
Those are always kind of unfair.
I think it's really unfair. Patrick Williams is a bad pick. Like, and then they doubled down by giving him a terrible contract. So yeah, maybe they should have taken Avdija, but obviously Denny was like, they gave him away to Portland essentially. So it's not like they were dying to have him.
All right. Is Billy Donovan good? Because let's review. I don't blame him stepping down. He's 60. He's like, okay, this has kind of happened to him twice. Think about his path. He gets to Chicago. They seem like they're going to be competitive. And that was kind of Chicago's whole thing is that we don't have anyone here where we think we can win a championship, but we have LaVine. We'll go out, we'll sign DeRozan. They make the Vooch trade, which ends up being a disaster, right? But there was a time there. I looked at it again today. In the 21-22 season, they were 39-21. Remember they put together that regular season? Maybe, I don't forget how high their seed was. 3 maybe? And they're cooking a little. And then I remember I tweeted something like, I'm still a little worried about them not having enough depth, like big wing depth to deal with Boston or to deal with Giannis. And then it was like, hey, can't we just be happy that we're 39-21? It was like, yeah, but the whole point now is when you're seated this high and you have this kind of record, now I start thinking about you navigating the Eastern Conference playoffs. And this would be what happens. And honestly, that was the high point. That was it. Because they have been a disaster since. They haven't wanted to fully tear it down. And now they have no choice, which is already the process of fully tearing it down, something I don't think Reinsdorf has ever wanted to do. So let's go back to the OKC stuff, because he gets the OKC job. They, in 2016, are in the Western Conference Finals. They blow the 3-1 lead before it was a 3-1 lead joke, which the Warriors obviously did in the finals after that. It was one of the all-time great series, by the way. That Warriors-Thunder series is one of the all-timers. So he gets to the Western Conference Finals in his first year, unfortunately blow the lead. Another aside to that was the weird, like, some people saying the Cavs actually didn't want to play OKC and they wanted to play Golden State. I always love that one. It's like, you wanted to play the team that won 73 games? Okay. Got it. Yeah, we'll take the easy one. We'll take, we, thank God OKC didn't play in the finals. Durant leaves. So now you're stuck with the Russell Westbrook show, which I have a couple things I could do here. But just to run through the playoffs here, they lost to Houston the next year, a 6-3 matchup. It's fine. This is the one that always bothered me. They were the four seed playing a 5 seed Utah. Donovan Mitchell just started getting going. That's the game 7 where Paul George was 2 of 16. They should not have lost to that Utah team, is my point. Russell Westbrook was a cool 18 of 43 in that game 7. 7 of 19 on threes. Good numbers there. A usage rate for that game of 50.
He took 19 threes. That's incredible.
43. I mean, look, he hit 7.
Yeah, he made them.
That's,
yeah.
That's amazing. Then he had that Portland series where they were a 6 seed. Portland was a 3 seed. They lost in 5 games. Russ shot 36% from the floor overall. That was that weird Russ Dame stuff where I think you were starting to see, like, what the hell's going on here? And it was a big, like, Dame time moment. And then they lost the first round the next year. And that's when Russ was gone. Chris Paul was in. I actually thought it was ridiculous. Houston was even in 7 games against that OKC team at that time. And early SGA, not entirely comfortable. In some playoff moments there. It was a lot of Dennis Schroeder. But Houston pulled that one out. So Donovan takes that job thinking, like, I have one of the best jobs in the NBA. And they got better. And they got to the Western Conference Final. Durant leaves. And then it's this Westbrook experiment where I just don't think... I think in the moment, people were having a hard time realizing what was happening. And yeah, I'll admit, like, I thought I was one of the first people to go, hey, what is this down here? Like, what's going on? So my point is, like, in peak Westbrook years, are you even coaching? Like, you might be doing some stuff. And
he's in ultimate can't tell me nothing mode at that point, right?
Yeah, right. And he wins the MVP and everybody's kind of in the side and he's the hero because he does the extension and he's not, remember, it was he's going to go to LA because he likes fashion and he is from Long Beach.
Yeah.
Right. And then he decides. And it's like the anti-Durant movement. So there was a ton of, like, Westbrook momentum. And it felt like the franchise was catering to him in every possible way to hope that he wouldn't want to leave because Durant just did. And it was probably the worst thing that could have happened to OKC because then they get stuck in all these years. And look, I'll never forget. Fuck it. I'll just do it because it still bothers me. But I was doing Mike and Mike one morning. And we had Hubie Brown on. And I had heard I already knew the answer to the test on this one. I knew that it was a problem down there. And so I was like, hey, Hubie, you know, if you're Billy Donovan and you have this great record and unbelievable college resume, and you have somebody like Westbrook who's so talented, I forget exactly every single quote from how I asked the question. I'm sure it was probably too long. But how do you handle having this talent, but knowing that it's not necessarily like the most coachable thing? And unfortunately, like Hubie just kind of went with Westbrook's an awesome player and Billy knows that. And it was kind of like not really what was happening. But I got one of those kind of, all respect to Hubie Brown, I got a very kind of like generic answer on it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then another analyst decided to tweet about how I had just gotten a schooling by Hubie Brown because this other analyst at ESPN hated me and used to call in to Mike and Mike and say, why are you having him on? And I just was like, all right. And then when I, you know, he and I had our, had it out, and I was like, cool, we don't like each other.
Noted.
Thank you. Noted. We're good. And then he somehow wanted me to still like him after. I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, now we don't like each other. It is understood. And that's how I move. Like, there is no like, hey, we're cool now. It's like, we're not cool. We'll never be cool. Fuck off. Leave me alone.
Have a good life. Yeah.
Yeah. Peace. So, and I'll probably hear from after this airs. It's like, oh, I didn't realize we had these issues. And I was like, all right, we do. Anyway. So back to the Billy Donovan, is he good? I think he's good, but I think he's been in two situations where the OKC thing turned into a different job after 1 year and became very challenging. And the Chicago thing that was not what he signed up for. And sure, you could say, hey, you got to stick it out. He doesn't. I think at 60, he goes, I need one more shot where I can go somewhere where I can actually compete because it's been like 7 years. And I would still say, yes, Billy Donovan. There's too many good basketball people that respect him. So anybody that's like, oh, look at the record, and he's getting worse and worse and worse, I don't think that's a fair representation of the two circumstances that he's been in the NBA.
Taking a time machine, do you think if he goes back and has a redo, he takes the Magic job in 07? Because remember, he took the job, had the press conference, and then basically had a second to change of heart and went back to Florida. And the Magic then hire Stan Van Gundy, and what, 2 years later, they're in the finals.
Yeah, look, I think Stan's really good on basketball. You know what I mean? Like, I could get into the Detroit stuff, and the New Orleans thing was a disaster, but I think Stan's run in Orlando is more impressive enough to not like have that be outweighed by the other two stops, right? I mean, the Miami thing isn't necessarily great when the team's like, hey, we don't want him to be the coach. So yeah, Stan has a couple things on
him. What does Chad call him? The master of panic?
Yeah.
Which is, he was great in Orlando. They were doing stuff. I mean, they were playing, you know, essentially Dwight and then four out before other people were. They were shooting a ton of threes. Like, that was pretty innovative. And then, you know, when he got to Detroit, it was like, hey, here's personnel control. And it's like, all right, maybe he's not built for that kind of thing. But from a pure coaching standpoint, like, Magic fans love Stan.
Yeah, and Stan had a really challenging thing where he had a delusional star. Like, Dwight's a star, and Dwight is great at the things that he was great at, but he was not a great offensive player. And Dwight, which makes all the sense in the world now, too. Like, Dwight has a real attention thing. Like, he desperately needs attention. And I think when he's younger, he wanted some of that attention to come through the cool basketball ways, where it's like, run more plays for me and do all these things. And he never figured out, he never developed enough of, like, what's the Dwight Howard finishing move on offense? It never actually happened. He was so gifted and so physical and so athletic that he still was going to score a ton of points. But he wanted to be the wing scorer, tie game, 1 minute left, like, all possessions go through me. It's like, okay, did you develop anything other than this, like, awkward, like, if you get bodied up 10 feet away from the hoop, what are you doing? And so Stan's trying to, like, appease that, knowing this is actually not, like, we might give you a touch, but we need you to kick it back out to somebody else, or we need to do all these other things to, like, get you free. But this whole, like, hey, Dwight, here's the ball, figure it out, just not who he was. And Dwight didn't want to accept that. And I would say for Stan, like, considering the success that they had, that's pretty remarkable.
Big win for him. Yeah. Yeah, I remember the Dwight 12-foot glass jumpers. I'd like to forget them, but I can't. Anyway.
All right, I think we got it just under 40 here. So, yeah, good nice. 10 minutes. Thank you to Cerruti. Thanks to everybody
Thursday,
on the show.
Thursday, emails.
That's right, Thursday, emails. NBA mailbag, rr@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show. Be hitting them up twice a week. I don't know. May do a night one. All of it's on the table.
May go live. Who knows? You know?
Could go live. I'd love that.
Let's do it.
TBD.
Night after a big game?
Night after a big dinner? All right, let's say goodbye.